You probably already know this if you're watching this particular show, but Russia is probably the most castigated country economically in the world. And yet, they're doing well. Quite well, in fact. How'd they do that? You gotta ask. Well, I'm gonna talk to the man who's in charge, per se, of the Russian economy, and you're gonna get to hear him. This is the Sanchez Effect. Hey, let's do this. The best way to get to know a country's condition is to just get out there, right? Go see it. It's, you know, it's not so much about statistics. It's not so much about numbers. It's about people, right? People tell the best stories. That's what I've learned all my life as a journalist. And since I've been here in Moscow, I have spent a ton of time outside, walking the streets, seeing the place with my own eyes, getting to know just everyday Russians. I got some video for you. Here's a typical Moscow streets that you're about to see. This is what you see every day when I go jogging in the morning, almost every morning, and when I walk to dinner at night. The people are generally elegant, right? Very family-oriented. And there's what I don't ever see. I look around, and you know what I don't see? I don't see homeless people sleeping on the streets everywhere. I don't see people who are morbidly obese, weighing 400 or 500 pounds. I don't see crime or signs of crime everywhere. This is just typical stuff you're looking at here. This is not specially selected video. This is all over Moscow. You also don't see people addicted to fentanyl or dying on the streets. As we all well know, those things that I just mentioned, all those things, they're rampant in the United States, just like they're rampant in most of the top Western cities in the world. Not here in Moscow for some reason. Oh, there are still problems and people bickering and some people mad about the war, some people mad at the president, of course, like in every country. But you look at those people, you look at the people, they're out shopping, they're out visiting cafes, they're having family meals, they're going to stores. They seem to have, by the way, just about everything you can buy when you go into those stores. I know, I go into them. So how did this happen, right? How did the most sanctioned, the most punished country in the world end up with a higher economic growth, GDP growth, than the countries who actually sanctioned them, who froze their assets, who froze their bank accounts, who told others, don't trade with them, who tried to punish them, bury them? How'd they do that, right? It's a hell of a good question. Well, you're about to meet the man who's in charge of Russia's economy. His name is Anton Siluanov. He's Russia's finance minister. He's a very officious guy, kind of, you know, typical Russian, all business, you know. I could barely get the guy to smile, but I did get him to come in here and sit down for a very real conversation, one I think you're going to enjoy. So here now, my interview with Finance Minister Anton Siluanov. Mr. Minister, thank you so much for being here. This is a very important conversation on a very important day. I just returned from the St. Petersburg Economic Forum, and I spent a lot of time there reporting, talking to a lot of people, and I was surprised. 140 countries, 22,000 participants, something like $82 billion in deals. I would imagine that probably 2 years ago, I wasn't here, but 2 years ago, it wasn't as rosy a scenario. I don't imagine there were so many countries, so many participants, so much money, so many deals being done. Did Spieth prove that Russia is back financially, economically, do you think? What is your take on the conference?
Well, there are facts. We can see that the Russian economy has grown above 4% over the past 2 years. 4%. This is a good result. This is higher than the average growth of the global economy. How was this achieved? You know, we took economic and financial issues very seriously as a government. Who to support, where to focus our financial resources, and I want to say that I think we succeeded because we supported people. By the way, real incomes of the population increased by more than 7% last year. This is 7.6%. It's great. Despite all the restrictions, in real terms, the growth above inflation increased by 7.6% in household incomes. That's cool. Our economy has grown by 4.3%. Investments are growing. By the way, our investments grew by about 8% in the first quarter, even more than 8%. What does this mean? This shows that we have done the right thing, supported the economy, supported manufacturing, small businesses, and new sectors of the economy, such as tourism. Let's assume that our business has started to work and now is working. We are now less dependent on energy resources, on the energy-related economy. It's great.
Really? Really? Wow, less than...
Therefore, by supporting important sectors, supporting the economy, and supporting people, we have gained an advantage in overall growth. By the way, what's all this about? We had a good safety cushion from that point of view. We created reserves, the National Welfare Fund. We have low debt. We have a 15% debt to GDP ratio. This is one of the best indicators of the G20. We have the lowest budget deficit at 1.7% in 2024. This year, it will be about the same amount, 1.7% of GDP. I mean, what am I saying? Responsible financial policy is doing its job.
Better than Germany, better than the UK, better than France, for example. I mean, they almost, I would imagine, they're kind of embarrassed about it. Right?
Why did they set limits? They're hurting themselves. They're harming themselves with their restrictions and sanctions against Russia. Why don't they think about their own economy and their own producers? That is, in order to harm our country, they harm themselves more. That is the answer.
You know, there's a quote I always hear from the West where they say, I've heard this in America, a lot of the big mines over there say Russia's just a gas station. All they have is oil and they have nothing else. And what you just said is that's not true. And I'll be honest with you, this weekend when I got back from Spief, I was really tired yesterday. So I just decided to go for a walk in Moscow. I must have walked, you know, 5 miles. And I'm walking around Arbat and I'm seeing people on the streets, people shopping, stores full of people, restaurants full of people, people buying things. And it was raining. And I thought to myself, I called my wife and I told my wife, she goes, what's it like over there? I said, you know, it's interesting. I see more people out on the streets. The economy looks more vibrant here than it does where we live. It does. Now, I'm not an economist, but I see signs that things are actually, it's not just about oil. It's a vibrant economy, no?
100%. By the way, you've been to St. Petersburg, haven't you? It's beautiful, and I think it's the best European city, the most beautiful European city. Well, you must admit, clean streets, beautiful architecture, a lot of canals. Moscow is also a great European city. Restaurants and shops are everywhere. I agree with you. We're doing everything to make all these restrictions and sanctions invisible. And the dynamics of the economy, as I have already said about the salaries of our people in general, shows that we're living and developing at a pace that allows us to look steadily into the future. Yes, indeed, we live in difficult conditions. All these restrictive measures are around us, but we're living and developing, and that's the most important thing.
I know you know Mark Twain. Mark Twain wrote a famous line. I don't know if you know it. It's American literature, but he said, reports of my death are greatly exaggerated. And I think reports of Russia's death are greatly exaggerated as well. There seems to be, you know, I don't see poverty in Russia. Maybe it exists to some extent. But so what you have is 150, 160 million people who consume, who want to consume, who like to buy good things. It's kind of a shame, isn't it, that the United States, for example, my country, the country I come from, would think, wow, you know, if they want to buy our products, let's get our products out there. But instead, I walk around and I see that, you know, the McDonald's are now run by Russians. The Starbucks is now run by Russians. All the other car agencies are run by Russians. I'm not sure the Russians are going to want to give those back to those countries that left here when they come back. I'm just thinking, it seems like it's going well, no?
Yeah, not bad. If we talk about McDonald's, then we now have the same kind of franchise. It's called Tasty and that's it. Russian McDonald's. By the way, I've been there, and it seems to me that it has become tastier, to be honest. Indeed, Russians have picked up the business of foreign participants who left for one political reason or another, leaving their businesses here. The Russians have picked up and are successfully developing it. Yes, indeed, you know, you are talking about the return of foreign business to Russia. We are always in favor. But the point should be that this is no longer to the detriment of the investments that our Russian entrepreneurs have made in certain sectors. Come and compete, I would say. Yes, please. We welcome any investment, and competition is always an engine in favor of the consumer. Therefore, we are saying that we are waiting for investments, please. By the way, we agreed that if new investments come, all the restrictions on the flow of capital that Russia has today will not apply to new investments. Please take them for yourself. Work here, pick it up, take it out. This is the main principle that we follow. This is the primary one. Secondly, if foreigners want to come and compete, but relatively speaking, they will no longer be able to take over the business that Russians have taken up and which is developing successfully by Russian entrepreneurs.
They won't. You welcome them back, but you can't just all of a sudden walk in the door and say, okay, I'm back. Here's the keys. You're not just going to give them the keys like that.
By consent, like in a marriage, by consent.
Let's talk about the other countries. So because Europe and America has said to Russia, suddenly India is here, China is here, Vietnam is here, all these other countries, and I may be missing some Middle Eastern countries, Qatar, UAE, they're doing business in Russia. Have you found markets in this economy that have created that vibrancy that you would not have found had it not been for the sanctions?
You know, we were forced to look for other markets. That's what it is. If there were no sanctions, I think that trade would have been developed anyway. Of course, we can see what's going on. Where is the economic center now? In the East, in Southeast Asia, in the Persian Gulf. And accordingly, our goods and services would also be slowly heading there. But the sanctions accelerated this movement. That's why we are really focusing on China, the Persian Gulf countries, and India right now. They are consumers, and Turkey is also a consumer of our energy resources. So this is a forced decision. Nevertheless, it would have happened naturally, historically, since the center of economic development is shifting to Southeast Asia.
What happens if there's more sanctions? We've heard the Senate in the United States talking about $500 sanctions to secondary sanctions on countries who buy oil from Russia. I know it's talk, but still, does it keep you up at night when you think that they could hit you with more sanctions, Europe and the United States?
Well, you know, this is one of a series of things that, remember, imposed restrictions on the price of Russian oil at $60 per barrel. Did something happen? Nothing. We also sell our oil. Today, however, world prices have decreased. If they adjust a little bit, we will see them at higher prices than we have today. So it's all very hypothetical, you know. All these sanctions, restrictions, 50% tariffs. The Russian Federation is one of the major participants in the global oil market. But how to exclude it from this volume? Then the price will rise. Who now wants, in the context of price volatility, within the framework of the Persian Gulf situation in the Gulf of Hormuz. Who wants even more for this price to be volatile? This is not beneficial to anyone. First of all, the United States of America, because their prices for petroleum products will also soar. Who needs it? Therefore, it seems to me that all these restrictions are not beneficial to those countries who introduce them or are going to introduce them. Of course, they are not beneficial to the Russian Federation either. Therefore, globally, everyone will suffer from sanctions.
Let's talk about Ukraine. Horrible situation. You want the war to end. I want the war to end. Everybody wants this conflict to finally come to an end. But one wonders, because, you know, I come from a country where people always say, oh, we're going to war again. Yes, it must be that they need to raise the economy, because for some reason there's always been a thought that wars help economies, they don't lessen them. Has this conflict with Ukraine been a net gain or a net loss for the Russian economy? If you could explain it or take me through it. Is that a tough question?
I wouldn't put it that way. It's a very wrong question, because Russia is achieving its geopolitical goals, the political goals set by the president as part of a special military operation. In the end, we are protecting our people who live in Donetsk, Lugansk, and other regions that have become regions of the Russian Federation. Political goals were set here. They are being implemented, as our president said, they will be achieved by any means. As for how this affects the economy, we began to perceive the situation differently. Bearing in mind that where sanctions were imposed on us, we pay more attention and develop these industries. This includes machine tool construction, mechanical engineering, and aircraft construction. We have started investing more in those sectors where we previously believed that we could purchase relevant items, machinery, equipment, and so on somewhere in the West. They imposed sanctions on us, and we began to develop the relevant industries more. And that's right, because remember, agriculture has risen since 2014 because they have imposed sanctions on us, on agriculture. Now we are paying more attention to sanctioned industries, and so it will continue. Therefore, if we talk about sanctions, we have essentially reoriented the goals of our priorities in the direction that fell under the sanctions. This means that we will develop our own competencies. These are the changes that followed after we faced these restrictions.
If, you know, if there's good news out there, and Russia has not had good news for a long time in terms of economic sanctions and relationships with the West, it's that I'm hearing and I'm reporting here that Mr. Trump and Mr. Putin are having conversations, regular conversations. It seems to me like Mr. Trump is interested in continuing a dialogue with Putin vis-a-vis with Russia. That bodes well, doesn't it? That it's better than the alternative in terms of maybe decreasing the likelihood that there will be more sanctions, don't you think? I know you're not a foreign minister, you're an economic minister, but I'd love for you to share your opinion on that, these conversations between these two leaders.
It's great when leaders communicate, and any dialogue is good. We have always advocated this dialogue. This is because it has not been there since the previous administration. And this is very good, by the way, for investors who understand that there is communication between the countries, which means that there may be positive increases in trade relations, economic relations, and so on. I know that investors, including foreign and American ones, would like to continue participating in the Russian market. They earned good money here and could continue to earn good money. Therefore, we are in favor of business development, and the closer the relations between the major powers, the United States of America and the Russian Federation, the better it will be for our economies and for our people in the end. We support such a dialogue.
I have to ask you a question that I just thought of now as I was reading in the press, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and a lot of there was a suggestion in the last week that either you or someone had suggested that there could be a recessionary period that could hit Russia. What are the odds of that? And if there is a recessionary period that hits Russia, how deep would it hit? How bad would it be, if at all?
We are not in recession, I can assure you. We have a cooling of the economy, a planned cooling of the economy, because by heating up certain parts of industries and so on, we have seen an acceleration in inflation. And together with the central bank, we have taken measures to cool down the economy as planned. Last year, we said the growth rate was about 4%. Now, for the first quarter, the growth rate is 1.5%. For April, 1.9%. In other words, there is no recession. And we see that the measures taken within the budget, within the framework of monetary policy with the central bank, have produced results. Inflation has decreased. Inflation has decreased in annual terms over the past month, which is already about 4 or 5%. In other words, this is the goal at which it will be possible to ease monetary policy. This means that credit will be more affordable. It means that business will have an appetite for new investments again, which means that we will gradually move out of the slower pace of economic development towards our goal. Our goal is to grow at a level not lower than the global growth rate.
I have a final question, because I think what has happened here in Russia in the last 2.5, 3 years is something that could have an effect or send shockwaves all over the world. And here's what I see. Tell me if I'm crazy. So the West, Great Britain, all of Europe, the United States, pounded Russia really hard. Sanctions, 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 punishment, freezing your assets, stopping SWIFT, not allowing you to do banking. I mean, just some of the hardest, worst sanctions in the history of the world. And yet, thanks to something, maybe you, because you seem to be a guy who's very competent, somehow sanctioned, Russia came out of these sanctions. Not only did you come out of the sanctions, you're in better condition than the countries who sanctioned you. It's crazy. It's really kind of crazy when you think about it. So as a result, now you have all these BRICS countries going, hey, look at Russia. They were able to survive the sanctions. Maybe we can do it too. Maybe we don't have to be so afraid of the big bad wolf. Maybe we too can kind of do the things that Russia. So somehow it seems to me you've almost come out the better for it. Russia is leading BRICS. Not officially, there's no title, BRICS leader. But it looks to me like the BRICS countries and countries all over the world are looking to you for leadership because you were able to muster the energy to survive all of this. It's kind of put Russia in an interesting place. I think a almost better place in terms of its relationship now with the global South and maybe with the rest of the world. That's my take. Pardon me for asserting it. I don't have your expertise. What do you think of that?
But I think that Russia is not a country that will bend under sanctions. First, our territory is large, and we are a self-sufficient country that can provide itself with everything it needs, from energy resources to food and brains. We have everything we need, first. Second, as part of the sanctions imposed by the G7 countries, we have reoriented our export and trade flows primarily to the BRICS countries, and we see that we have succeeded. Third, as we have already discussed with you, we have begun to develop the sectors and industries that we need for self-sufficiency. Technological sovereignty is one of the most important topics in recent years, which we have been dealing with in a very substantive manner. And I think we are succeeding in this. So really, you know, sanctions, everything will depend on the situation in the country's economy, on the decisions that the country makes in response to these sanctions. It seemed to me that the balanced decisions that the government made, where our president gave clear instructions in which direction to act, they worked. And we see that those who impose them suffer more from these sanctions. The sanctions policy is not promising and has proved to be unproductive.
You answered the question and you mentioned something which now makes me want to ask one final question. I apologize. Because when I think of technological advancement, I think of Taiwan and I think of China and I think of chips and I think of AI technology. I think of India servicing that as well. I don't think of Russia. And you said that's the one thing we're now going to work on. Can you expand on that a little bit more? Technology.
Absolutely. We make our own products. Remember, they said before that Russia will face a catastrophe after the sanctions, which means that they will deprive it of technological development. They said Russia is twisting chips out of their washing machines. It's utter nonsense. We've never done this. We will make production of our own chips. That is why we are actually developing artificial intelligence in the same way as other countries. Yes, of course, we would like more cooperation. But it's okay if they tell us no. Then we will develop our own competencies ourselves. This is how it will happen. Therefore, I repeat once again that Russia is a self-sufficient country. And this is probably what Western countries did not take into account when they imposed these sanctions, which is their mistake.
You know what? This has been a very good conversation. You have a great personality for a finance minister. I thought you'd be boring, but thank you very much. I appreciate it, Mr. Minister. Thank you for taking the questions and taking the time to spend some time with us. We very much appreciate it. He is, after all, a guy who works numbers all day long, and yet it was interesting to be able to have a colorful conversation with him. He's obviously, look, a smart guy, and especially when you consider what he and Russia has been able to do despite the odds. Despite the odds. That's the key here. Look, that's it for us. Thank you so much for being a part of the Sanchez Effect, where the news is real, it's raw, it's honest, and devoid of corporate spin like you see everywhere else. You can catch my podcast, Journalistically Speaking, on YouTube. And, oh, you can find me on X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it. I'm at Rick Sanchez TV. Let me know what you think. We'll have a conversation. And I'll be looking for you next time.